Enwe Financial is a registered investment advisor. Information presented is for educational purposes only and does not intend to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Be sure to first consult with a qualified financial advisor and or tax professional before implementing any strategy discussed herein. It is a glorious Saturday morning. Not just a Saturday morning, but a glorious Saturday morning. Wish you were all here. It's 10 o'clock. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we'll be hanging around for the next hour, and I hope you can do the same. Regulars, welcome back. We always appreciate you being here. And if you're new to the show by accident or on purpose, try to stick around for the hour and see. Maybe you'll learn something. Maybe you can contribute something. Adam and I will be talking today about all kinds of things that we'd like to talk about. We would love to talk about some things that you'd like to talk about. Anything in the financial world or how politics interferes with it or anything you can think of. If you're inheriting money or you're doing your 401k, redoing it, or you want to talk about the impact of the tax cut bill on your situation, any topic in the world you can think of. And remember, there are no questions that are too easy, because the easier they are, the better we look. So you can do us a favor by making it simple, or we can dig into a subject that you would like. So we're going to start out, as always, looking at the what happened in the market this week. And I got to say that was the longest four-day week I've ever seen.
Yeah, that was
more happened
week
in less time.
With not a lot of change and to close out the week, though.
No, it was just bizarre. But I'll let you explain that, if you can.
Yeah, well, my favorite thing about this week was the strong buying into the close on Friday. I love when that happens, because that means that investors are not scared to hold their equity positions over a weekend, which means probably they're optimistic about what's coming in the next few weeks. So we saw a really nice rally on Friday, and it basically turned all three indexes positive for the week. Before that, they were more or less flat or down a little bit, despite the kind of wild swings we saw during the week. So for the week, the Dow was up, ended up 0.4%, the S&P climbed 0.6%, and the NASDAQ increased 1.4%. All three indexes are still down in February, but for the year, they're all up. In fact, the NASDAQ is now up more than 6% on the year, while the other two are up over 2%. So not bad for late February.
You'd never know how we got there, would you?
No, you wouldn't. The S&P's been trading right at its 50-day moving average for a week or so, which kind of supports my theory that I had a few weeks ago that the correction was just a reversion to the mean. The market had reached extreme overbought levels in January, and is now it's in a much better range. I'm much more comfortable where it is today than I was 3-4 weeks ago.
Yep. Agreed. Too much too fast is always going to come back and haunt you.
It's more what I expect out of the market in the near term. I think that we'll see less volatility than we've had over the last 3 weeks and more sideways trading without big advances or declines. However, I think that could be broken during quarter one of 2018 earnings season, starting in April, as companies start to report their results under the new tax law. We could see something really interesting happen at that point.
Mm-hmm. April's generally a good month anyway. Might be a real good month this
could
year.
Could be. So for the year, technology continues to lead the way, gaining over 7%, while consumer discretionary is not far behind. Real estate, telecom, energy, consumer staples, and utilities are all lagging, down 4%. So really, the market's being pushed up by a couple of sectors and dragged down by four or five others. Some international markets are outpacing the domestic market on the year, including Brazil, which is up a staggering 15.5% year-to-date. Russia's not far behind, though, at just over 12%.
That's because there's so much in the news. Russia, Russia, Russia.
Yeah, but not for the right reasons.
No, it's because energy's coming back, and what do they do over there?
Yeah, that is their economy is quite dependent on that. However, not all foreign equity markets are up. Canada is down about 4% on the year. Not sure why that is.
I'm just not even going to go there.
Yeah, I'm sure you have a political commentary there.
You better believe it.
Commodities have seen kind of a mixed year, with gold up 2%, silver down 2.5%, and oil up over 6%, while natural gas is down almost 5%. So really kind of a lot of disparity there. There isn't any disparity in fixed income, though. It's all down. The longer the duration, the worse it's been. 20-year treasuries are down almost 7% this year, while 7- to 10-year treasuries are down over 3%. As expected, short-term notes are down less than 1.5%. So just remember to keep your durations short in a rising interest rate market, because that is a trend that I think will continue throughout the year.
Yeah, it depends who you listen to, but I'm not a believer in the only one increase at the Fed this year.
No way.
I'm sticking with my three.
I think three as well. I think the economy is too good not to.
Yeah. The odds now, I was reading this morning, the market odds say there's a better chance of having only one increase than having four. I categorically disagree.
I think four is probably on the extreme high side, but 2 to 3,
but what
I think
if it
is,
happens? What if all the economy starts to perk up even more like it could?
Yeah, I mean,
they're not afraid to do it.
Be great for savers.
Would be.
Earnings season for 2017 is now, or quarter four is now unofficially closed with Walmart reporting. That's usually marks the end of earnings season. The beat rate for earnings stands at 69%, the best it's been since 2006. The revenue beat rate stood at 73.2%, the highest since 2004. I really can't stress enough how important that is, as analysts were raising targets for almost all companies going into the season, and they still manage those really high beat rates. Companies are getting more profitable, and that drives the market higher, so I'm very excited about those numbers.
And guidance, forward-looking estimates are up for the fourth quarter, mm-hmm. fourth straight quarter, not just quarter four.
Right, but going into quarter one, yeah.
Which just happens to coincide with the new administration's time in office.
Mm-hmm. And the tax cuts.
Yeah.
So in economic news, it was pretty light, but I just want to point out jobless claims. We had another great week, and we are now at the lowest level since 1969.
Yep.
On an unadjusted basis for population.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Which means that there's inflation coming in the labor market.
You would think so. You would think we would have seen more already, but
yeah,
it's definitely
actually
coming.
Actually, in December, I got a little insight here. I don't even know if it's true, but in December, the average monthly earnings fell 0.2%. I have a theory that the labor force is putting marginal people to work at lower levels. So you're getting a disproportionate number of lower wage people in there. I don't believe that if you ask the same people the same question between quarter three and quarter four, or between November and December, you would get that answer. I think for already employed people, wages are rising.
That might be true. And we're also losing a lot of high earning baby boomers out of the economy. So as 12,000
a day,
something like that. So when those people retire, they might get replaced by a less expensive younger worker, which could add to that as well.
Right. So don't believe the number on its face without thinking about the why behind it.
Those are both good points, I think.
Mm-hmm. I think so. Good lessons to learn.
And one other note, if you are thinking about Florida prepaid for your kids, the open enrollment ends on February 28th, so hurry up and sign up if you're going to this year.
Yeah, what that means is your kid technically gets a year older on the 1st of March.
Right.
Which means going to cost
more
you
expensive.
More money.
Yeah, the sooner you get in, the cheaper it is.
All right. Well, aside from just being so happy, I had a couple other little comments about what's going on in there, but I decided I was going to put this whole thing into our trivia question, which I will give to you right after the break, and it's about what's driving this market. Adam alluded to it a little bit ago, but it's very in some places, it's very centered on the success of some things that are going on out there. And that's what we'll cover in the trivia question as soon as we get back. Then I'm going to debunk some advertising, talk about annuities and that sort of thing. Lots to go yet today. Give us a call, 222-8255. We'll be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And this week's trivia question is brought to you by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm. Call Ken at 904-636-7888. And it has to do with one of the high flyers of this, of lately. Not just this year, but lately. The old-fashioned FANG, F-A-N-G stocks, Facebook, Amazon, Netflix and Google. They've made the A a double now. They added Apple when it started going up. So the FAANG FANG stocks are driving a great deal of this market, which is why technology is performing so well. But let's just talk about one of them, the N. How much has Netflix stock gone up this year, knowing that it's the 24th day of February only? And I'll take it. I'll give you a hint. Adam guessed 18%, which is too low. And I'll take it plus or minus 5%. Now, I'm already looking at that saying, man, it's been a great year.
Yeah, no kidding.
Well, how much is Netflix appreciated this year?
Also, on a side note, those of you that are waiting for your if you guessed the trivia question right and haven't received your card, we are waiting on our supplier to restock us, and I'll get those out to you as soon as I can. I think there's three of you that are waiting.
Okay. Well, what's up with him anyway?
He's just busy. Really, really
busy. That's a good thing.
Yeah.
See what happens when you advertise on this show, folks?
Yeah, exactly.
So anybody who's interested in doing that would have to go through the same thing that anybody else would have to go through. We've got to know the product or service, use it, make sure it's good, and make sure you know what you're doing. So here we go. You ready for this one? Some local radio stations have been playing some advertisements lately that just caught my ear. This one that I'm going to talk about today is called U.S. Freedom Checks. Well, some guy down there, they show a map, some woman up there and some guy down there and some person over there and somebody up there, all holding up their U.S. freedom checks.
So they actually physically got a check?
Yes, they did.
And it's a U.S. freedom check.
Well, that's what it's being called.
Okay.
So I've tried to figure out what it is. So I Googled it, and here's guy comes popping up on the website. And he's holding up this check that he calls the U.S. freedom check. And it sounds just great. It sounds to me like, as an American, I'm probably qualified to get one, too, because he says claim your checks right now, right?
I would claim it.
I was wondering exactly how much mine is going to be, so I dug into it a bit. And it seems as all you got to do to find out is just call this certain phone number. Easy money, right?
Sounds like it.
What could possibly go wrong? Well, because I'm interested in these things, I decided I certainly wasn't going to call them, because I know once you call them, you will never hear the end of them, ever. So I just looked at the website to see what it was, and I found out that these so-called freedom checks are indeed mandated by the U.S. government just exactly as they claimed.
Mm-hmm.
Now, why is that? Well, a lot of investors are familiar with master limited partnerships, particularly big in the energy business.
Or MLPs.
MLPs, yeah. And a lot of people buy limited partnerships in these MLPs, and they buy them for their income stream. Okay, it's cool. Wait, we've had a few.
Yeah, I hold one right now.
Yeah. That's all fine. Now, there's a variation on a theme on the master limited partnership called a publicly traded partnership. The differences are minuscule, but it actually blends in some of the partnership stuff with some of the REIT-type laws, real estate investment trust types. In other words, it's a flow-through entity, and they've been getting a lot of talk lately because of the change in the tax law. Flow-throughs mean the company itself doesn't pay taxes. It flows the profits through to the people who own that company, and they pay the taxes. That's called a flow-through business. Typical would be individual businesses, sole proprietorships, sub-S corporations, things like that. You opt for personal rather than corporate taxation. And because of the change in the tax law, they have become an interesting way to do your business again. Anyway, the PLP, like the REIT that it's similar to, has a requirement that it will not pay federal taxes under one condition. And that condition is they pay out 90% of their qualified business income. What does that mean? That means it has to be produced from doing their business. So that's fine. If you're in the energy business, it's from energy. If you bought and sold a building or something like that, or a machine, that would not count, because that's not part of the business that you're in. So anyway, you can buy into the PLPs, and apparently these people from the website are perfectly willing to sell you some PLPs. And then come March, the PLPs are required by law, if they want to not pay federal income taxes, to send checks to people. Well, how are they going to know who and how much? Well, they look at the shareholder roster, and they divide the amount of money they have to pay out by the number of shares, and you get a per-share distribution. How many do you own? There's your check. So, as they say in Latin America, ipso facto, oh no, that's Latin. They're government-mandated checks that are sent to people in America. Now, did I need that website to get sold on buying shares in a PLP? No. Do I need some shyster radio advertising to tell me that I need to look into this so I can get a freedom check? No. Do you? No. What in the world are they thinking? I'm telling you, I've been in this business about 17 years, and I think I've seen it all. I think I've heard it all. And then something like this comes up, and I realize I'm nowhere near as clever as all the other people out there who keep making these things up.
So did you do any research on the actual investment? What are you buying?
They're mostly energy producing.
Oh, okay, so it is basically
perfectly legitimate. There's nothing wrong with it. The only thing that wasn't legitimate was how they're telling you to get your money. You buy into something that pays a dividend, they pay you dividends. That's it. We apparently have a call, and it's not showing up on my computer, so I apologize to the caller. Good morning. Name? Al. Okay.
Al.
Good morning, Al. Sorry, it didn't come up.
That's okay. I was sitting there listening to your...
my rant?
Yes. I own the Alarion MLP.
Yeah.
And the only problem is I bought it back when the oil was high, and of course... When they started going down, the shares started dropping. I asked the broker, should I sell it? And he said, well, it's getting a good dividend. Just hang on to it. Well, it's never came back. I mean, I got like $18 share cost basis in it.
Mm-hmm. What's
and
it trading
even the,
at?
The discount, the amount of dividend is a whole lot different. It's dropped. So
yeah.
It used to be paying real good. Now it's not. So I'm going to hold it. I don't know. It'll probably never go back. But anyway, I was going to answer the trivia question.
Great.
Isn't it about 50%?
You are 50%. You're well within the limits. It's up 49%, and I wanted it within 5. You did it.
Yeah. Okay.
Remember, don't hang up when we're done talking because we'll get your name and address. Good. Wonderful. That's quite a year, isn't it? 24th of February?
Yes, it is.
It tells me something about a lot of things. The nature of the way we're going to be watching TV in the future is definitely changing. If I were places Comcast, I'd be a little bit more aggressive at trying to make their customers satisfied. But that's
just
me.
You're right. Instead of raising their fees, they have a chance they get every chance they can.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Anyway, are these shares held in a retirement account?
You mean the
Alarion?
Yeah, they are.
Okay, so you're not going to be able to save taxes.
I'm hung there, yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's too bad. That was the first line of thinking for me, what can we get out of it? How much did the dividend go down? In other words, what percentage yield is the...
About 8%.
Yeah.
It's not bad. I mean,
no.
8%, where are you going to get 8%?
If you wanted to look at something that... might have a little more upside. I don't think we're going to see $100 oil again for a long, long, long time.
I tend to agree with that.
Because we're doing more domestic production now, so we're not being manhandled by OPEC the way we used to be.
Right, exactly.
So, you look down the road and you see inflation, if you're like me, see all the stuff coming up. Actually, the import index went up 1% in January, following 0.2% in December. Exports up 0.8%. For the month those were December versus November, I guess. But things are ramping up in the inflation market. What loves inflation? The stock market loves inflation. Mm-hmm. Real estate loves inflation. There are things that you can do. If you wanted something that might have a similar yield and a little more potential upside, maybe looking at a publicly traded REIT would be the way to go. There are several of them out there. But I have a couple of favorites.
Well, So one thing about what he holds, it's actually an ETF that has it has a yield of about
AMLP.
Right. Yeah, it has a yield of about 7.5%. Year-to-date return is almost 6%. So you're really not doing that bad by holding it right now, even though it's it has been pretty volatile over the last few years.
You know, there's another stock called Enbridge.
Yeah,
EEP. And I have some of that. Of course, I got some Enbridge stock. And I'm going to tell you, everybody that's handling that has got a higher basis on it than, you know, a higher price. And the stock keeps falling down every day. I just don't understand it.
Actually, there's reasons for that. Can you hold on through the break?
Sure, I will.
All right, thank you.
Okay.
All right, we got to take a little break, and we'll come back and talk about why certain things are out of favor, even though the market is so hot. It's kind of interesting. I don't agree with it necessarily, but you don't have to. It just is. Don't go away. This is the Van Lee Financial Hour.
Financial is a registered investment advisor. Information presented is for educational purposes only and does not intend to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Be sure to first consult with a qualified financial advisor and or tax professional before implementing any strategy discussed herein.
Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we've been talking to Al about some master limited partnerships, notably in the energy business, and that things are not well. So we're going to carry that on. All right. Reasons that the energy MLPs are not doing well right now. In my opinion, Adam and I were talking about it through the break. You are there, all right?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Good. The reasons are not terribly valid to us. If you're just looking at pure logic, they're defined logic. We know why, because it's an interest rate sensitive investment.
Extremely sensitive.
Yeah. So when people are expecting interest rates to go up, things that pay the big yields go down. Now, there's not a heck of a lot you can do about that in the short run, because investors are not going to change their attitude about interest rate direction until the Fed tells them to. So right. Then it is, what do you do? And gosh, the yield on Enbridge is awfully attractive, I would say, don't you think?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, that's the reason why I'm continuing to hold it. The only thing is all the brokerage, if you go in and look at all the brokerages, put price tags on it, all of them in the 50 to 60 category, whereas Enbridge on a trading basis is only around 33 to 35.
Mm-hmm. I have.
So I don't know how they could be missing this thing so much.
Well, maybe they're just forward looking and anticipating. I don't know. I have an idea, though.
They've been anticipating for a long time.
Yeah, no kidding. You want to do a little out of the box thinking? How's your income tax situation?
I end up owing.
Okay. Can you handle it from your cash flow to owe a bit?
You mean to sell it and write it off?
Well, here's what I'm thinking. Instead of doing that, that was the obvious thing. You can't write it off because it's in a qualified account.
Right.
What if you took a whole bunch of those and performed a Roth conversion at the low levels they're at now? And you hold it in the Roth, and then someday when you want the money back out, let's assume they go up 60% or better. That money is now tax-free forever because you paid taxes on a very low amount this year.
As is the yield, the income from it.
Right, right. And it would all be tax-free to you.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that is a tax hit one time up front. Are you 65 or older yet?
I'm over 65.
Okay, so it might possibly impact the cost of your Medicare, too, to add that kind of additional income. But it might be worth a look to see exactly what the impact would be. Now, one thing everybody should remember is that the Roth conversion starting January 1 of this year, in other words,
that's right,
six, 7 weeks ago, whatever, it's no longer able to be undone. So if you do it, it's a permanent change. You will pay taxes on it.
Mm-hmm.
But if you decide you want to do all of it, some of it, or whatever, and test the theory, it is an idea.
Okay.
In an arena where very few ideas come to mind.
Okay. All right. I'll think about that.
Do. As far as when it's going to come back, I think time's on your side.
Yeah, I've had, well, both Alarion and the Enbridge, they pay good dividends, so
yep.
Let me just hang on to them.
Yeah, if you're like
we'll
typical people in our age
group.
Yeah, it's fantastic. But take a look at that Roth conversion idea.
Yeah.
And other people who are listening, maybe you've got something like that too, where if you've got something that's really depressed but you think it's going to come back, throwing it over to the Roth side might just avoid the taxes on those gains forever. So something
right.
to think about.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much.
We appreciate the call, and we have your address.
Yes, sir. All right.
Thank you.
Bye-bye now. Bye-bye.
Couple of other things about that. If you are, if you don't need the income from it, if you're not taking that out in an RMD or you're just leaving it in your IRA and you do believe that that is going to go up in the future, make sure you're reinvesting those dividends, especially on the one that's paying close to 12%, because then you'll by default have 12% more when it does go up and you'll see the benefits of that.
Every payment, your cost basis average comes down a little bit.
Right. So buying at a low level, even if you can't, you don't have cash sitting around to buy more of it, you can take those dividends and reinvest them, which I do on everything. But a lot of people who need income don't use that strategy, and it's definitely something to take a look at.
Yeah, okay. Well, speaking of bargains, and you know we were, some of these are bargains.
Okay.
We got a few of them as a country over the past few decades, didn't we?
We sure did.
Adam was looking up what the country was bought for and what it's worth now, and he's got some very interesting numbers on it. Some things had funny names like Folly.
Yeah,
and
Seward's Folly.
Let's see what history has done to the Folly.
Yep. So this week I was listening to a Planet Money podcast, which is a great podcast, by the way. I listened to it on my way to work and back. And they mentioned that America borrowed $80 million from its own people to finance the Revolutionary War. Obviously, that turned out to be a pretty good deal for everyone involved, because at the end of the war, they sat down and decided, should we default or should we pay it? And they decided to pay it because they didn't want to get a bad reputation as a new nation. And that's sort of how we got to our super high credit rating, safe viewed as a safe place to put your money all around the world. That's where it all started. Really got me wondering how much we actually paid for America, though. As it turns out, we got a great deal.
Manhattan was a good start.
Yeah. I had my assistant look up all the major events that took place that involved land expansion in the United States. So the Revolutionary War is where it all got started, and the total price of that war was $151 million in 1776.
Whoa.
In today's dollars, that is $2.7 billion, or roughly what we spend on our defense budget in the U.S. today in about a day and a half. So that is 1.5 days of spending on defense. That's how much we got all the original land for. Our defense budget today is almost $650 billion, just for reference.
Mm-hmm.
The next major addition was the Louisiana Purchase in 1803. This massive land grab covered about 830,000 square miles in the center of our country. France sold us this land for $15 million, which today would be worth somewhere around $250 million. This works out to about $300 per acre at today's prices, which, as it turns out, is pretty cheap. Undeveloped land in the U.S. is estimated to be worth about $6,500 per acre, or about 22 times what we paid to France. This one really hits home because in 1819, Spain ceded Florida to the United States. In reality, they could no longer afford to support Florida and wanted to get rid of it. So in exchange, we gave them some land out west and paid them $5 million in those dollars.
Yeah, the air conditioning was getting too expensive.
Right. In today's dollars, that is about $81 million, or roughly the revenue generated by Disney in about 2 days in 2017. No, I'm not making that up. They really did. They earn about $40 million a day in revenue.
Jeez.
In 1853, the Gadsden Purchase sent $18.25 million to Mexico in exchange for parts of southern Arizona and New Mexico. Seems like an odd place to buy, but the real reason for it was that it contained land that was better suited to building a southern east-west railway line, which was then completed in 1883. Okay. In today's dollars, that equates to $546 million, or about 2% of the GDP of the city of Tucson, the largest city that falls within the boundaries of that purchase.
Hmm.
The last major land purchase was completed in 1867 when the U.S. paid a whopping 2 cents an acre or $7.2 million for Alaska. In today's dollars, that's about $128 million. Alaska now pays out about 10 times that or $1.3 billion annually to its residents from its oil royalty fund. So all in all, it cost about $196.5 million to buy the United States or $3.7 billion in today's dollars. Considering that the U.S. economy generates about $33 million per minute in income, it would take just under 2 hours or 112 minutes to generate enough money to purchase the entire USA. I'd say we made a pretty good investment.
Not too bad. There's some of those folks like Seward took a lot of grief at the time.
Oh, did he ever? Yeah. He was just
what are you going to do with all that frozen tundra until you find out that that frozen tundra has a whole bunch of things that we need and like in it.
Oil, timber, fish,
name it. Oh, boy. On tourism, even, partly. Yeah. What a deal. All right. After the break, I'm going to wrap up the annuity series and go into a few words on long-term care. And as I admonished everyone last week, don't turn the radio off. I will make it interesting. I know everybody hates talking about annuities and long-term care and insurance and all that stuff. But there's some things going on out there that are really good for people to know. And if you want to get into the real nuts and bolts of personal financial planning, not letting your last few years of life take away all of your money so that you wind up a pauper is a really important topic. And that's what this is really all about. So don't go anywhere. We'll be back very shortly. We'll talk about all that stuff. This is the Van Lee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And this segment is brought to you by Robinson Landscape and Maintenance because things are growing like crazy and they're all putting out pollen, according to my nose these days. Give Troy a call at 662-9794. All right. Well, in order to tie annuities into long-term care, you kind of have to start at the beginning or start at the end. I mean, work back to the beginning. So I decided I'm going to introduce it kind of the reverse way. So over the next couple of weeks, I want to talk a little bit more about long-term care insurance. And to understand what it is, it's really easier to tell you what isn't long-term care insurance. But during this period of time here, we're going to cover the what, when, where, why, and how about paying for it. Well, what is it? Expenses for long-term care can be incurred in a hospital, a retirement home, assisted living facility, in your own home, or whatever. And over the years, as I tried to do this, the only way I can find that makes any sense and dispels some of the incorrect notions about it is to tell you what will not cover those expenses. Medicare, no. Social Security, no. Social Security disability, no. Short-term and long-term private disability policies, no. Traditional health insurance, no. Medicare supplements, no. None of these things will pay your long-term care expenses when you get older. So up until a very short number of years ago, if you wanted those expenses to be covered, you had to buy a traditional long-term care insurance policy. They're wonderful. Everyone should have one if you could afford it. That would be really nice, and I call it wealth insurance because it protects you from spending all that money toward the end of your life. Your children will thank you, and your spouse might thank you too. But it's painfully obvious that not everybody can afford one of the most expensive policies in the entire industry. So let's start with when. That's a tough decision. When you're young, it's really cheap, and they don't raise premiums ever. Unless they raise them for all people in your category, and that has happened lately, but the increases, but I think they're starting to slow down now. So I would say, first off, the earlier you can afford to do this, the better you are. But not everybody, when they're young, having children, buying homes, paying off school and all that, is going to be able to afford the policy. Most typically, these policies are purchased by people in their 50s and 60s. Once you get a little later in life, upper 60s, 70s, and so on, the per-year cost edges up quite sharply with age, as insurance things are wont to do. All right, where? This one's important. You're going to buy an insurance policy, and I don't care if you, what you're talking about for sure, but it's particularly true here. You want to buy something that when the time comes that you need it, it is going to be there. And that means you need a financially responsible company. There are a lot of rating agencies like Moody's. But if you remember about 10, 11 years ago, those rating companies pretty much getting a black eye on the things they were doing in the mortgage-backed securities market, you might not want to pick out one of them to trust. I have a solution. Our old buddy, Stan the Annuity Man, puts out on his website, which is stantheannuityman.com, something called the Comdex rating, which is a company that puts together a conglomerate, an averaged-out rating for every insurance company, so you get the input from Moody's and all the others. And if you're getting a good Comdex score, it means there's universal agreement that the company is good and worthwhile. And we'll talk a little bit more about that later, too. All right, now why? Why do you buy this? Well, because most people, and by most I mean about 70% of people during their life, will have trouble taking care of themselves as they get older. The insurance companies have gotten together, and they have named six basic activities of daily living, or ADLs they're called. They are eating, bathing, dressing, toileting, transferring, which means walking, and incontinence. Most long-term care insurance policies will start paying you benefits when it can be shown by a physician that you're having trouble doing two of those without assistance. There are some group long-term care policies that will only pay for you to go into a nursing home when you're incapable of doing three of them, but those are on the rare side. So before you make a judgment about your own eventual need as to when and where, you should also know that 40% of people who require long-term care benefits in any given year are between the ages of 18 and 64. This is not strictly an older person's policy. It's mostly, but not completely. You do have a 70% chance of needing some care. The national cost, nationwide average cost, for nursing homes or in-house nursing care is more than $90,000 a year per person. And in some states, like California and New York, it's considerably more than that. $150,000 is not uncommon in New York. Two-thirds of Americans believe incorrectly that Uncle Sam will pay for your long-term care needs. Long-term care insurance is tax-deductible within limits for people who itemize. But again, full disclosure, medical deductions so far have only been allowed for the next 2 years. They may go away after that. They may get extended. I'm leaning toward Congress extending them, but it's an educated guess. It's certainly not in the law yet. We refer to it as wealth insurance because your nest egg pays it if your policy doesn't. And older people have a funny way of spending a lot of their their earned wealth and accumulated wealth over time. Kids, talk to your parents about it. That's all I can tell you. You should attach critical importance to the financial strength and the policy itself. So only deal with people who know what they're doing. They'll tell you what's important in the policies. Now, how to cover it is where we're eventually headed with this thing. First off, if you can afford a traditional long-term care insurance policy, as I stated earlier, please do so. It is the only true insurance product out there, insurance for the conditions we were talking about. Everything else have been, all the other gimmicks have been cobbled together and renamed, and they run under the names of hybrid policies, and they're not true. They are not hybrids. They are traditional insurance products that have riders on them to accelerate giving you your money back during times when you would otherwise qualify for long-term care insurance. So don't let yourself be misled by the snappy insurance people who are telling you, oh, this is a hybrid long-term care insurance policy. It is not. Long-term care insurance is exactly that. And there are good and valid reasons for that, too, because they'll pay you forever no matter how much you've paid in. And if you're putting money into an annuity or life insurance product, you're not going to have that ability. So long-term care insurance sales have been falling now because prices have been going up a lot. Well, another thing you need to know is if you have one and you're considering giving it up, think twice. There are things you can do. You can negotiate through your carrier. Maybe reduce your benefits slightly, reduce the nature of the COLA clause in it slightly, change your elimination period, freeze your daily benefit for a year. They are willing to talk to you about ways to keep the cost down because it's going to behoove them to do so. We do know people, if you want to get in touch with us and ask us, we know people who know how to negotiate for you and can do that if you have a policy and you're having trouble justifying paying the amount that they want for it. So what do you think about a policy that is an annuity or a life insurance product that when you need it starts accelerating your payments, which will help you pay the bills? I think it's brilliant. It's just sold a little on the fuzzy side. But I'm going to go into how to finance these policies, what to expect out of them, what's better, annuity or life insurance product, and how fast is it changing in the market. So if you find that either due to your age and the cost or due to your inability to pass the very rigorous underwriting standards to even buy a policy, you still want to be protected against the possibility of having to pay a lot more for the care itself later on, stay tuned next week, and we'll bring you some options that will help you cover it. As I said, it's very critical. It's not easy to buy, both due to cost and to underwriting. And if you can, you should have it. It's a cornerstone of personal financial planning to not run out of your money. It's been shown in many, many studies that people are more afraid of running out of money than they are of death. I, for one, am part of the majority. That would be horrible. When Adam's looking at me like, you better keep paying yours. And I will. No problem. All right. Well, that was quick, and we'll wrap up another segment. We'll see you back here next Saturday, and we'll talk about that and anything else you guys would like to talk about. So see you right here then. This is the Vanway Financial Hour.